She said, why?
So we're watching these, and I get this all the time, right? So we're watching the trials, and I say to my kids, we're all sitting there, and I say, I can do that. You see that Christy Yamaguchi over there? I can do those things.
You can't do that, Dad. Come on.
I said, yeah, I can do that. I used to be a great skater. I can twirl, and I can skate, and I can go backwards, and I can do figure eights and axles. I can do all of that stuff. I used to do all of that.
Come on, Dad. You can't do that.
I said, yeah, I can. I really can. So we have occasion to go to up into Massachusetts, and I'm putting on my ice skates after 34 years. Haven't been on skates in 34 years. And I lace up the skates, and I'm getting ready to go out there and skate, and the kids are all like, oh, he's got a... And I go right out there, and within 15 seconds, I'm doing what I was doing 34 years ago. Skating, twirling, going backwards, doing all the things that were just second nature to me when I was growing up in Detroit, down in the Detroit River. And the interesting thing is that the body that knew how to do that in 1958 is dead. There's not one cell left in it. Yet the knowing is still there. I don't have the same brain. I have different cells. I don't have the same femurs. I don't have the same ankles. It's all different. Replaced. And yet the knowing is still there. You see, a knowing is metaphysical in nature. Somehow, beyond the physical, transferred to the physical through some process that we can't even begin to comprehend. The knowings that you have in your life, like I know I can swim, I know I can dance, I know I can make love, I know I can walk, I know I can do all of these things that I have a knowing about, all came from within you, and all of the things that you believe in were handed to you. So consequently, your knowings will never let you down in times of crisis, and your beliefs will almost always let you down in times of crisis. Those things that you believe in are handed to you, and those things that are handed to you come with doubt, because someone else is giving it to you. This is what you're supposed to believe. This is what you're supposed to do. This is how you do it. Yeah, that's great. And you're going, but then there's a doubt attached to it. But that which you know isn't. Now, unfortunately, most of the things that we know as individuals also are in the area of what we know we can't do. We know what is impossible, what can't be done. So if I were to ask you, can you be in more than one place at the same time? You know, can your body be here, and can it be someplace else at the same time? You said, no, you can't do that. And if I said, well, could you transport yourself from here to, say, Montana or Spain just through the power of your mind? You said, no, you can't do things like that. And I said, well, can you enter someone else's dream? You know, go into dream consciousness from the waking, go into someone else's dream and become a character in their dream voluntarily. You say, no. Can you fly? If you come across a tree, can you jump over it? Can you levitate? There's a lot of things, and those are just some of the extremes. But I want to remind you of what one of our spiritual masters said to us through St. Paul. Even the least among you can do all that I have done, and even greater things. Even the least among you can do all that I have done, and even greater things. Just let that into your consciousness. Because now we're talking about someone who is changing shapes, and raising the dead, and feeding the hungry, through the gift of manifestation of fish and loaves, changing water into wine, the ability to be able to create a miracle mindset for yourself is not available to you if doubt is in your consciousness, because what you think about is what expands. And if you have doubt, you will act on the doubt. You can't act on anything else. What you think about is what expands. The ancestor to every action is a thought. So if your thoughts are that this is not possible, that's what you will act on. Deepak talks on these tapes that we put out about Living Beyond Miracles about this placebo effect. And the interesting thing about the placebo effect is that if you give an individual a pill that is made out of sugar, and you say to them, this pill is the latest cancer-curing drug, take it, that your body will begin to manufacture the anti-cancer agents from that pill. And if you take the very same pill and give it to someone else and say, this pill is the greatest ulcer-relieving pill that's ever been relieved, and you really know that that's to be true, you will start developing anti-ulcer with the same pill. And if you say that this is for the elimination of headaches, there's never been a greater headache remedy, and you know it to be true, your body will start to manufacture something different. Different enzymes being created through the intention of no doubt. So that the physical world that you are in is capable of being shifted and manifested on the basis of a new awareness. As you think, so shall you be. Your thoughts will create an entirely new reality for you. Once you have learned to banish the doubt. Beliefs come from outside of you. Beliefs always let you down, and beliefs are intellectual acts. Knowings come from within. They will never let you down, and they are metaphysical cellular acts. You can have knowings in the physical domain, and you can have them in the metaphysical domain. Knowings, without doubt, about your spirituality and your ability to manifest what you want for yourself in your life. See, remember that even if you're sitting here with doubt this afternoon, there is still a doubter that you can never see. There's still, so the evidence that there's still an invisibleness there is here in the doubter. Not the doubt, but the person doing the doubting. That invisibleness. And that is what you have to learn to come in contact with. When I was writing the opening for Real Magic, I looked for a display quote. And the display quote that I picked for this particular book was written by a scurvy elephant, a poet named Samuel Taylor Coleridge. For those of you who don't know what a scurvy elephant is, when I was in the third grade, I came home and asked Mrs. Scarf, what's a scurvy elephant? She was the lady who ran the orphanage. She was a saint. And she said, I don't know, I've never heard such a thing. And she said, why? And I said, well, I heard the third grade teacher telling the principal that Wayne Dyer was in her classroom and that he was a scurvy elephant. She said, yeah, I don't know. And she got on the phone and she called the principal, and the principal said, no, that's Wayne. He mixes everything up. She didn't say that he was a scurvy elephant in her classroom. She said that he was a disturbing element in her classroom. So, I always pay homage to the scurvy elephants of the world, because I've learned there is probably a karmic debt that we all pay. And each one of us, as we are scurvy elephants in our own life, get a couple of them in our own families later on. That's the one that you can do nothing with. That's the one who's got a mind of their own, and no matter how much you cajole and punish and threaten and so on, they still have got their own mind. And you know, after a while, that you're wasting your time. You know, that, like, you better stop and be at peace with this person and teach them harmony and maybe step back and learn something from them. One of the great karmic lessons that I've learned is that the one that you can do the least with will make you the most proud. You know, if you can survive them. So if there is a karma to all of this, I think I must have been an axe murderer in a previous life, because I've got 8 of them just like that, all right? All of whom have their own mind, and all who's that do have their own mind, whom I adore. and stand back and never try to take it away from them. Because we also learned in our studies when I was writing What Do You Really Want for Your Children about how to apply these principles to the raising of children, we discovered that the ones that are raised on blind obedience and are taught to do exactly what they're told and never question anything are the ones who have the highest degree of prejudice as they grow up in their life. And why not? They're taught to prejudge. You know, you're supposed to think this way. You're a Bosnian, you're supposed to hate a Serb. You're a Muslim, you're supposed to hate a Jew. You're a Hindi, you're supposed to hate a Sikh. It's, you know, and then you just you raise them to not think for themselves, to get into this no-think mentality. And so I honor my scurvy elephants. And there was one named Samuel Taylor Coleridge who took on kings and queens and so on up in the eastern part of the United States 100 or so years ago. And this is one of his great poems. And I'd like you to just, as I just say it to you, I'd like you to really banish the doubt. I'd like you to just let it in. Do what we used to have to do in poetry classes when I was studying English literature. They used to tell us that you have to have this willing suspension of disbelief. You know, when you go to a movie theater and there's a two-dimensional screen there, and you know that this is just lights flickering on and off in a screen. It's not real. And you don't go in there and say, well, this is ridiculous. Those are just lights, and those aren't people. And look at this. I can put my hand in their face. You don't do that because you wouldn't be able to get anything out of it. So what you do is you suspend your disbelief. And you allow yourself for a couple of hours to be entertained. And then you walk out and you say, ah, that was so phony. They didn't do this and those were... So while you're in it, so what I'd like you to do for the remainder of time that we have is just suspend that disbelief and just listen to this. This is what Coleridge said. He said, what if you slept? And what if in your sleep you dreamed? And what if in your dream you went to heaven and there picked a strange and wonderful flower? And what if when you awoke you held that flower in your hand? What then? I wonder how many of you know that such a thing is impossible, to bring something from dreaming consciousness into waking consciousness. And if that knowing is so pervasive that you can't allow yourself to entertain the notion that even the least among you can do all that I have done, that you have it within you as a people, as a species. There's a collective unconsciousness in the world. One of the things that I've committed myself to talking about is a very simple thing that what we all came in here knowing today about AIDS. What do we know about AIDS? What do we know? What have we been bombarded with for the past 10 years about AIDS? If you get it, you what? You die. We all know that. You can all say it in unison. And you know, if you took and look inside in the new technology today, you look at an atom, and they have these electron microscopes now where they can literally take an atom and they can take these, you know how they have these electrons and protons and croutons and neutrons and whatever they are that you had to measure when you were in junior high school, remember? You can now take those electrons, these little tiny subatomic particles that are hurling around through these massive empty spaces, and you can begin to align them. And as you align them and get them in a line, when you get to what they call a critical mass, when you get to that point, let's say whatever it is, if there's a billion of them in there and you get to 2 million, there's this like invisible force that is inside of this atom that all of a sudden overwhelms the atom and all of the rest of the electrons in there automatically align.